Morning to all those who are here with us in person, and welcome back to our weekly shiur. This week, as we know, we are at a very exciting juncture in the Jewish calendaric year, Mishenichnas Adar Marbim B'Simcha. When we come closer to the holiday of Purim, we're supposed to be in a jovial, celebratory mood, and obviously we should all be moving toward that kind of mindset, which leads us to this morning's topic. We should really have an opportunity, as many of you had requested, to talk about some issues that come from Megillas Esther. So really, I want to give just a shiur today that is going to give us an appreciation and a background for this unbelievable, phenomenal experience of the Purim miracle, the Purim story. And I think sometimes we have a mistaken impression. We go to shul on Purim night or Purim day, and we read the Megillah in 30, 40 minutes. If you go to a faster Baal Kor, you hear it in 25 minutes. And be it as it may, we sometimes think that this is a story that really unfolded in the span of one evening, or maybe in the span of a half an hour. But the truth is, this really was something that was a drawn-out, prolonged story that took 9 years to play out. So when we look in retrospect and we read all the psukim and we see the story, it all makes sense to us because we happen to know the end of the story. But at the time, this was a terrifying reality. And the Jewish community at the time were apprehensive, they were worried, they were horrified by the decree of Haman. They thought that things were going well in the Persian community, in Paras, and suddenly everything turned on them. So we need to just spend some time understanding and appreciating what happened in the times of the Purim story. What was going on? What was the background that led to this great miracle? And I think as we do that, we'll have just a greater appreciation for how wondrous this festivity of Purim is really supposed to be for all of us. So let's begin with some very important background in Sefer Malachim. The Navi there tells us, and this can be found also in Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim often repeats many of the stories that we find in different Sifrei HaTanakh. So in Sefer Malachim, we find a description of what happened at the time of the Churban Beis Hamikdash. And the Psukim tell us, this is Sefer Malachim, Perek Chav Dalid, Pasuk Ches. Ben Shmona Esrei Shana Yehoyachin B'Malcho. Yehoyachin was a Jewish monarch, he was a Jewish king, and he was 18 years old when he took the mantle of leadership. And he was only 3 months into his leadership over Yerushalayim. He was the Melech Yehuda, he was the king of the Jewish people who lived in Yerushalayim. He had sovereignty over Yerushalayim, and he was only 3 months into his rule. Ba'esahi at that time, Alu Avde Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Babel. Nebuchadnezzar was the leader, the king of Babel, the emperor, and his servants, his army came to Yerushalayim, Vatavo Ha'ir B'matzor. And at that time, they laid a siege. They put a blockade around Yerushalayim. Vayavo Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Babel Al Ha'ir. When Nebuchadnezzar hears how well his servants are doing, how well the army is faring, so he comes as well and he joins this initiative. Va'avadav tzar malan, he gets to Yerushalayim and he sees that they have laid quite an impressive siege around the city of Yerushalayim, and he realizes that the Churban is imminent, the Churban is coming. Va'yotze misham es kol otzros beis Hashem ve'otzros beis HaMelech. Nebuchadnezzar and his army cleared out the coffers, the treasury, all the repositories that were in Yerushalayim were cleared out, were taken out from Yerushalayim. V'higla es kol Yerushalayim ve'es kol hasarim. And he evicts, he banishes all of Yerushalayim, he vacates all of its members, nobody was allowed to remain there. Ve'es kol gibarei hachayil, all of the soldiers, all the dignitaries, everybody was cleared out from Yerushalayim. He destroys the Beis HaMikdash. He leaves Yerushalayim in shambles, in total disarray. The city that once was the Ir Hatila, the focal point of the Jewish people, has now become obliterated and wiped out. And they all are sent to Galus Bavel. They are all sent into Galus Bavel. The only people who were left there, the Navi describes here, are some destitute vagabonds, some homeless people who were left behind, who Nebuchadnezzar didn't mind if they stayed because he knew nothing would happen. So they were the only ones left. But everybody else, including the king himself, all the dignitaries, the army personnel, everybody ends up in Bavel. And that is what we refer to as Galus Bavel. At the time of this Galus, at the time of this exile from Yerushalayim, from Eretz Yisrael, by some unusual fate, Yirmiyahu Hanavi is allowed the permission to remain in Yerushalayim. So Yirmiyahu Hanavi is in Yerushalayim. The whole Jewish community has now been evicted from Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael. And Yirmiyahu Hanavi decides that he needs to encourage and support the Jews who are now living in Bavel. He was very concerned. He was concerned because if you've ever read any stories about the Holocaust, you're well aware that after the terrible tragedy, the devastation, it's an understatement to stay at, but after all that they endured and the survivors then were sent to a DP camp, there were many who said, why should we invest of ourselves? Why should we build families? Of what worth is our family going to be if in just another few years it's possible for another genocide to wipe them all out? Should we build up businesses? Should we build communities? There were many who had tremendous courage, but it takes unbelievable courage to rebuild after suffering such a devastating blow. And that is what happened at the time of the Churban Beis Hamikdash. Jews watched how everything they knew to be a part of their lives, everything they knew to be the staple of their lives, had been devastated, had been destroyed. And they understood that now they were in Galus, and many of them gave up, and many of them said, we have no reason to go on further. We have no reason to build families, no reason to build communities. Our life as Jews is over. And the Navi here tells us in Sefer Yirmiyahu, Perek Chavtes, that Yirmiyahu sends a message to the Jews living in Bavel at that time. And he says, Banu Batim, you should build, you should construct homes, you should establish neighborhoods. Vishevu, Vinitu Ganos, Vichlu Espirion, inhabit the land, you should settle the land, you should plant, you should be prosperous, you should build businesses. Kichu Nashim Beholidu Banu Bubanos, you should marry, you should have children. Kichu Lebeneichem Nashim Ezbenoseichem Tinula Anashim, you should encourage your children to get married as well. Don't be afraid. V'teiladna banu mubanos. Uruvusha bi'al timatu. You can proliferate. You can mushroom the Jewish community into something so much bigger. V'dirshu es shalom ha'ir. Fascinating comment here where Yirmiyahu HaNavi tells them, get involved with the politics of the city. Dirshu es shalom ha'ir. Participate. Be concerned with all that's going on in your municipality. V'hispalalu ba'ada el Hashem. And you should pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they be successful. Now how strange is that? We're talking about Bavel that just destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. This is Nebuchadnezzar and his army who have just taken us out into exile from Eretz Yisrael. And yet, Yirmiyahu HaNavi says no. When you get to Shul, you should daven for the host country that is now taking care of you. You might hate them, you might be upset at all that they've done, but he explains, Ki b'shloma yihye lachem shalom. Understand that if the economy is going well in Bavel, it's going to be good for you as well. If there's law and order in Bavel, if there's some kind of system that works for the community in Bavel, it's going to work for you as well. So it makes sense. As much as you may disagree with their foreign policy, as much as you may disagree with many of the decisions they make, you should daven on their behalf because this is important for you as well. It's not just important for them. Everything good or bad that happens to them will inevitably impact you and your community as well. Ki cha amar Hashem Tzevakos Elokei Yisrael. Yirmiyahu HaNavi says, you know, sometimes you have a person who's in a very difficult situation and they refuse to accept the reality. You have somebody who's a terminally ill patient and we all know from the outside where it's headed. But the person is delusional and they refuse to accept the reality and therefore they don't make any plans for what is going to be when fateful decisions need to be made because they just can't accept the reality and the family sometimes cannot accept that. And sometimes they have all kinds of misleading thoughts that they share with each other. And the Navi here says, you're going to have people who will be delusional, who will say, we'll make an uprising, we'll migrate back to Eretz Yisrael, we're going to overcome this galus, this exile. And Yirmiyahu HaNavi says, just take it for what it is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put you here. This is exactly where you belong. You will be here for 70 years, at which time the Ribono Shel Olam, in the last line here, Efkod Eschem, the same terminology that Moshe Rabbeinu uses. Pakod Yifkod Elokim Eschem. God will remember you. He will take you out. It's the same terminology used here by Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Efkod Eschem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after 70 years, will remember you. And He will allow you to return to Eretz Yisrael, and He will allow you to build once again your country and your community in the land of Eretz Yisrael. It so happens that after 50 years of the Jewish community being in Galus Babel, along comes one of the new Persian emperors, one of the new Persian kings, and his name is Koresh. It's unclear exactly, based on history and Chazal, who he was. He was a son of Ahasuerus, he was a family member of his, not exactly clear. But Koresh was the new leader of the community in Babel, and Koresh has this great idea. Once he takes over the mantle of leadership, the Navi tells us in Sefer Ezra, let's read it together in number Gimel, Bishnas Achas LeKoresh, the very first year of Koresh's rule, of his monarchy, Paras Lichlos Devar Hashem Yipir Yimiyo, Heir Hashem Es Ruach Koresh Melech Paras, God enlightens the eyes of Koresh, and He gives him this great idea that he should disseminate a message to all the Jews all over the world that they now have the right to go back to the land of Eretz Yisrael. After all, he says, Pakad alai livnos lo bayis b'Yerushalayim asher b'Yehuda. God has empowered me, God has authorized and enabled me to build a Beis HaMikdash in Eretz Yisrael. And he calls upon the Jews and he engages them to go back to Eretz Yisrael. He asks the Jews that are going to remain behind to support these efforts, to send money to those who are going to Eretz Yisrael, because building a Beis HaMikdash is something that somehow became a priority. As the Navi says, God put it into his mind, and Koresh took that idea, and he then disseminates it to all those Jews who are living under his rulership. He asks Jews to contribute, to underwrite the efforts, to endow all the efforts for a Beis HaMikdash, and in fact, there are some Jews that go. Ezra, who was the leader of the Jewish community at the time, did not go right away. And the Gemara says for technical reasons he didn't go, because Ezra still had a teacher who lived in Babel, and his name was Baruch ben Neria, and the Gemara says that he was too old to go up to Eretz Yisrael at the time. So Ezra stays behind. It's not until about 20 years later that Ezra also decides to go up to Eretz Yisrael. Ezra is sent officially as a diplomat of the Babylonian kingdom. They send him to Eretz Yisrael. He has very good political connections. Ezra at the time gets all kinds of deals made with the Babylonian government. He has a tax exemption for all Kohanim and Levim because they're busy running a Beis HaMikdash. They're busy building a Beis HaMikdash. Ezra has the right to authorize lawmakers to take over the law of the land in Eretz Yisrael, and he sets up a very powerful system. One of the things that Ezra was involved with at the time was the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Ezra was the leader of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, to which he wasn't the only member. It was 120 of the great leaders at the time, one of them being Ezra HaSofer, another one being his very close friend, Nehemiah. Right? When we read in Navi, Ezra and Nehemiah, they were very close friends. And Nehemiah was also a member of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Nehemiah at the time was the Sar HaMashkin to Artachshasta. The Psukim tell us that Nehemiah was a minister in the government as well. Nehemiah had a very high profile job in the Persian government. And at some point, Nehemiah, although he was in the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, he played this dual role. He was involved in politics, he was very involved in the government. And Nehemiah then gets a security clearance to go to Yerushalayim as well, to join the Jewish community there. He leaves Persia. Ezra and Nehemiah get the whole Aliyah movement going back after 70 years. And Ezra and Nehemiah are instrumental in building the walls of Yerushalayim once again. And things are going in the right direction. I mention all of this because that is really the backdrop to the story of the Megillah. I think people often get confused, when did the story of Purim actually happen and what was going on? It happened in that period of Galus Babel. So you have to understand that the Jews at the time, there were many who were alive who remembered the Beis HaMikdash. It was only 40 years prior. And there were many Jews who remembered what had happened. They remembered living in Eretz Yisrael. They remembered what it was like to see a functioning Beis HaMikdash with Kohanim and Levim. And in fact, when we are introduced to Mordechai for the very first time in the Megillah, his whole identity is connected with the Churban Beis HaMikdash. How do we introduce Mordechai into the story of the Megillah? Which, by the way, Mordechai was also a member of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. He was one of the Gedolei Hador. So it was Ezra, Nehemiah, Mordechai. Those were three of the very prominent members of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. So how are we introduced to Mordechai HaTzadik? Well, he is described as a foreigner, as a refugee. Asher Hegla Mirushalayim. Right? Anybody remember that tune? Is a rather sad tune. We happen to lay it on Purim when we read the Megillah, but it's really borrowed from Eicha. Im Hagola Asher Haglisa. That's a description of the uprooted Jewish community that used to be in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. Asher Hegla Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. That's a description of all that we just said. Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim. He lays a siege. He destroys the Beis HaMikdash. He clears it out. Mordechai is one of those people who was thrown out of Yerushalayim. And here he is in Persia as part of the Jewish community that is now stuck in Galus Bavel. In fact, the Gemara has a bizarre comment where we're told that Mordechai was Gala Me'atzmo. Mordechai had a self-inflicted exile. And many commentaries try to figure out what exactly that means. He wasn't in a self-exile. He was thrown out of Yerushalayim by Nebuchadnezzar. He was forced out. So what does it mean? The Vilna Gaon explains what it means is that Mordechai was in denial that they were living through a churba. And he said to himself, I will not stop to care about Yerushalayim. Im lo ales Yerushalayim al rosh simchasi, I don't care what happens, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Although the Jewish community was thrown into galus, Mordechai himself went back. Mordechai decided he's not going to give in. He goes back and establishes his home in Yerushalayim again. Only a few months later to realize that he was going to be kicked out. And he is sent into galus a second time. A few months later, a few years later, he tries it again. He will not give up because Yerushalayim is so much a part of his identity, is so much a part of who he is. And Mordechai understood, finally, after a few cycles of this exile, over and over again, he realizes, I guess this is the Jewish people's fate, that we need to remain in Galus for a certain period of time. And it's only then that Mordechai gets so involved in all that went on in Shushan, in Paras, in Persia, and with all the Jews who were living in Galus at that time. The point is that the backdrop of Yerushalayim was so much a focus of the Jewish community at the time. The Churban Beis HaMikdash was so fresh on their minds. And it was at the forefront of the Purim narrative as a whole. So much so, we have a very unusual halacha when it comes to Purim. When it comes to every other holiday on the calendar, we celebrate on the same day. When it comes to Purim, leave this year aside, because this year it's super complicated. But when it comes to Purim on a regular year, so you have most of the world keeps Purim, observes Purim on the 14th of Adar. You have Yerushalayim observes Purim on the 15th of Adar. Anyone ever wonder how strange that is? What's that all about? Why would you do such a thing? Why wouldn't everybody have a uniform observance of Purim? Let everybody do it together the same way we observe all other Yom Tovim throughout the year. And the answer is because, if you look carefully in the Megillah, we are told that the Jews were given an allowance. The Jews were given the right to take nekama me'oivehen, to take revenge from their enemies. And that was something that they did, but in Shushan, that miracle lingered one extra day. And therefore, we highlight that if you're a walled city like Shushan Habira, where the miracle lasted, where it lingered an extra day, so you lay in the Megillah on the 15th, whereas the miracle for everybody else happened on the 14th. Okay, so that makes sense. If I live in Shushan, are you familiar with anybody who lives in Shushan today? Somewhere in the middle of Iran, I believe. I think. In Persia. So, if you live in Shushan, you should highlight the miracle on the 15th. If you live outside of Shushan, which is every other place in the world, you should highlight the miracle on the 14th, but that is not the case. The halacha is that if you live in a walled city that had a wall around it, Mimos Yehoshua ben Nun, then you observe Purim on the 15th. What does Yehoshua ben Nun have anything to do with this? Anybody know how many years before this Purim story Yehoshua ben Nun lived? I don't know either. But I would venture to say probably 800 or 900 years. Something like that. The first Beis HaMikdash lasted 400 years. David HaMelech and Shlomo were the ones who built the first Beis HaMikdash. Yehoshua ben Nun is the one who brought the Jewish people over from the Midbar, from the desert, into Eretz Yisrael. He conquered the land. I would imagine it was 800 or 900 years from the time Yehoshua ben Nun lived until this moment in history of the Purim story. What does Yehoshua ben Nun have anything to do with our story here? Why would we take the same model of Shushan HaBira and extend it to any city that has a wall from the days of Yehoshua ben Nun? It seems to be conflating two different issues. And the Yerushalmi asked this question, to which the Yerushalmi responds in number Dalit. Choku kavu le'eretz Yisrael. You're right. It has absolutely nothing to do with Yehoshua ben Nun. And there really is no good reason why we put all of these cities together. It should be Shushan HaBira versus the rest of the world. But the answer is no. Choku kavu le'eretz Yisrael shahaysa chareva ba'osam hayamin. Yerushalayim was in a state of disrepair. Yerushalayim was destroyed. And the Jews said, we need to make a commemoration. Now, when we observe Purim, we need to build into that commemoration something that highlights the significance of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is not the same as any other city. Yerushalayim is going to be singled out. And therefore, when they set up the original Takana of Purim, they said, any walled city from the days of Yehoshua ben Nun will have a different status. Why did they do that? Simply to give kavod to Yerushalayim. That every Jew should remember Yerushalayim. I think over the past year, over the past few months in particular, we've been through such a horrific gzeira min hashamayim. And yes, it's all min hashamayim. It's a painful gzeira min hashamayim. But I believe that a major part of it is that we've been stripped away from that gift of being able to go to Eretz Yisrael and to Yerushalayim. Somebody said to me recently, we treated Eretz Yisrael as our playground. Jews in America, we go, we have fun, we go out to eat, we stay in restaurants, we stay in hotels, we stay in beautiful apartments, it's great. But we treated Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim like our playground, and now the Ribbono Shel Olam took it away. And we need to change that mindset. Eretz Yisrael is not the playground. Eretz Yisrael is where we belong. And the Purim story is a time to remind ourselves of the significance of what Eretz Yisrael means to a Jew in Galus, of how we need to highlight Yerushalayim. The Chachamim, when they set up the Din of Purim, and when we are supposed to read the Megillah, they changed the rules because they needed to give significance to Yerushalayim. And we all need to do the same. We need to think about Yerushalayim. Yes, we're living in Galus, and yes, we have a painful experience in Galus. And we need to therefore think about how much of our identity is connected to Yerushalayim. When Mordechai introduces himself in the story of the Megillah, the way he describes his own fate is, he is a Jew from Yerushalayim. That's who he is. It's what he's all about. It's what all of us are about. All of us wear our share haglum Yerushalayim. We all know that's where we're supposed to be. It's where we hope to be. It's where we hope to end up. So Purim is certainly a celebratory day. It's a day when we have festive moods. And that obviously leads the Gemara to ask a very obvious question, which is, you know, we say Halal on every exciting day in the calendaric year. We say Halal on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. They are considered Yamim Tovim. You ever wonder why we don't say Halal on Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is also a Yom Tov. So why don't we recite Halal on Rosh Hashanah? It's not a trick question. So the Gemara answers, because Sifrei Ma'asim v'Sifrei Chayim Psuchim Lefanav. It's a day when our lives are hanging in the balance, when we don't know what's going to be. We don't know what our fate will be. It would almost be inappropriate to start singing and dancing Halal. It's just the wrong tone for a very solemn day on Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim. And therefore the Gemara says, although these are considered Yamim Tovim, we have to make sure to tone it down a little bit, so we don't say Challah, which always makes me think, every year I go to Shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and you have Chazanim who choose all kinds of songs to sing. And I sometimes wonder, you know, the songs don't fit the words, it doesn't fit always the theme of the day. Sometimes you have a really good Chazan, it's not just that he has a good voice. A really good Chazan is also somebody who knows how to choose appropriately which Nigunim to sing and which ones are not appropriate. So we always wonder, we leave out Challah because Sifrei Chaim is Sifrei Mesim Suchim Lefanov. We don't say Challah because the mood of the day is supposed to be a certain way. But then we're going to sing songs that seem to take us out of that mood and totally disregard the feeling that we're supposed to have of Sifrei Chaim is Sifrei Mesim. It's just an interesting observation I've had over the years. But anyway, so the Gemara here asks, why do we not say Hallel on Purim? And the Gemara says we have a simple equation. If when we were taken out from slavery in Egypt, we all felt that that was a reason to sing Shira. When Haman Arasha Bikesh Lahashmid Laharog Laabed, when we were all under the threat of a genocide, when Haman tried to destroy all of us, Tafin Hashim B'Yom Echad, everybody, every Jewish citizen, and yet we were spared. So the Gemara asks, we don't say Hallel, does that make sense? Why should this be different? Why should it be less than the story of Pesach, when we all know that Hallel is an appropriate response? And the Gemara gives a number of answers. The Gemara first says, well, we don't say Hallel for anything that happens in Chutz Laretz, because it's marred. Anything that happens in Chutz Laretz is not the ultimate. It's not as great as it can be. It's not as great as it should be. To which the Gemara says, hey, one second. If you follow that train of thought, it's not really true, because, as we know, Yetzias Mitzrayim also happened outside of Eretz Yisrael. That was also in Chutz Laretz. All the makos, all the miracles, Kriyas Yamsuf. So if that's the case, why do we say Hallel when we commemorate all of those miracles? So the Gemara then says, we have to reformulate the answer. Finally, the Gemara comes to the conclusion, maybe when we read the Megillah, that is a incarnation, a reincarnation of the Hallel. It's just said in a different phrase. Obviously, when we read the story of the Megillah, we're praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's one answer. Answer number two, which is what leads, I think, the Me'iri. It's not the way we paskin, but he says, let's say you have somebody who doesn't have a Megillah, and they're stuck on Purim. They don't know how to read the Megillah. They're unable to do the mitzvah. So the Me'iri, I believe, is of the opinion that he should just say Hallel. Because after all, the Gemara says that the Megillah takes the place of Hallel. But if you don't have the Megillah, so maybe you should say Hallel. It's not the way we paskin. An interesting thought. But that's what the Gemara says. And finally, the Gemara comes to the conclusion, no. When we were set free by Kriyas Yamsuf, we stood up and we said, Hallelu Avdei Hashem, we're so proud that we are the servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we were able to say that with a full heart. We are no longer Avdei Paro, we're no longer subservient to Paro and to all that that represented for us as a people. However, the Gemara says, when we were saved in the days of Haman, how can we stand up and say, Hallelu Avdei Hashem? Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for allowing us to be your servants. Akati Avdei Achashverosh Hanan. Even after the Purim story, we remained in Galus. Nothing changed. So there was a threat that Haman brought into the world. That threat was taken away. But we remained Galus Jews. And that was a terrible reality. We were not where we were supposed to be. And therefore the Gemara says that is why we don't say Hallel, because there is something lacking. As much of a miracle as it was, there is something deficient, there is something lacking in the fact that we were not able to return to Eretz Yisrael after that story. But I believe there's something that is extremely relatable, extremely relevant and germane to our current and contemporary culture and society that we live in here in America. When we read the story of Purim every year, I always think that it speaks to our culture. What I mean by that is the following. Let's compare Purim for a moment to Hanukkah. Hanukkah was at a glorious time in Jewish history. The Jews were living in a sublime reality with a Beis HaMikdash. It was a remarkable time. You were able to see the glory of the Jewish people. That was the Hanukkah story. Unfortunately, as we know, there were many Jews who had trouble with the Greek culture. But they were living in Eretz Yisrael. It was a glorious time. Purim, on the other hand, happened in Chutz Laaretz. Akati Abde Achashverosh Anan, even after the story happened, we were in a lowly state of being. We were in a very unpleasant situation. We were not in our own land. This was the first time in 800 years that the Jews had been out of Eretz Yisrael. Think about that. They came in right after Moshe Rabbeinu dies. Yehoshua ben Nun brings them into Eretz Yisrael. They settle the land. They prosper. They're successful. Lots of rich Jewish history. 800 or 900 years. This is the first time that they're outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's the backdrop of the Purim story. Rashi poetically calls the Yom Tov of Purim as the Geula de Galus. Rashi writes in Maseches Megillah that this is the redemption of the exile, which is almost paradoxical. But that's what Rashi's getting at. It was a strange phenomenon. Things were not great after the Purim story. And yet, you contrast Purim with Pesach, and you see that things are pretty okay. When we talk about Pesach, we were tormented, we were persecuted, we were oppressed by the Egyptian culture, by the Egyptian society. And yet here, in the Persian government, there was a certain sense of integration. There was tremendous assimilation. The Jewish community at the time were living very tranquil, peaceful lives. Nobody was oppressing them. How do we know that that's the case? Look no further than the Sudas Achashverosh. And what you see here is a gradual, progressive, and steady corrosion of Jewish life. And you see how the Jewish community just deteriorates and, I guess, degenerates over time. There were Jews who remembered what it was like to live in Eretz Yisrael, and slowly they became more and more involved in Persian society and Persian culture. Until we get to the rock bottom, when Achashverosh decides to have a celebration. What was this all about? Achashverosh, the Gemara tells us, was not a member of the royal family. Achashverosh was the Shomer HaSusim. Achashverosh had the lowliest job to the prior king of the Persian government. Happens to be, because he was hanging around the palace doing his job, the princess Vashti fell in love with him. So he married into the family. But he knew that he was not worthy of being king. He knew that he didn't belong there. And the first couple of years he had a complex. He was nervous. Is this really going to work? Am I going to be overthrown? He didn't know who he should trust, who he shouldn't. He wasn't sure whether he'll be successful. And the Gemara tells us that basically after the third year, when he realized things were pretty stable and things were doing well, he decides, now we're going to make a celebration. It's a celebration because the Jews will never go back to Yerushalayim. That dream of Eretz Yisrael is over. According to his calculation, it had already been 70 years since the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. That dream, that reality is over. It's time to just party. Because we now have full sovereignty over the world. We have now conquered everything. So he decides to make a party. This party is so excessive, it's so extreme. You talk to people who marry off children, they're exhausted at the end of the week of Shavuot Brachos. It's a lot. It's beautiful. It's a good thing to be exhausted from, but it's a lot. You plan a wedding, and then every night you're out going somewhere else to a party. But here, Achashverosh makes a party that lasts for 180 days. Do you understand how long that is? 6 months. It's a half a year. A party for a half a year. I don't know if anybody here has ever signed up to do something for 40 days in a row. 40 days baking challah, 40 days saying ketores, 40 days in kalokeinu. I don't, everybody has their ideas. I don't know where the number 40 came from. But whatever it is, 40 days going to the Kotel and Kever Rachel, and you can pay money and someone else will do it for you. Whatever it is, all these great ideas. 40 days, but that's a commitment. And sometimes people find it hard to commit to a 40-day agreement, whatever it might be. We have a hard time paying attention to to 40 minutes. I remember when Rabbi Leibowitz started his 10-minute halacha. So at some point along the way, he called me. I was in the White Shul at the time. He said, Shai, you know, I'm doing a 10-minute halacha. It seems to be going really well. People are interested. Why don't you try a 20-minute halacha? I'm like, okay, I don't do these things. I don't know how to do these things. So I started it. That was like, at the time, it was a big hit. 10-minute, 20-minute, like, you know, it was bite-sized. At this point, we're so passe. I see online, everyone's posting like 1-minute thing. Like, it's too long already. To listen to 10 minutes is too long. Forget 20 minutes, you're out. You know, this is how we are. 180 days, can you imagine? Keeping focus on a party for 180 days? That's a long time. I would imagine all the schools were closed. I would imagine the economy shut down. Everyone's just partying. And who was invited to this party? So the psukim say that he invites everyone. They lived in a very tolerant society. There was equality, and everybody was equally entitled to participate. So everybody's there. Every citizen, every civilian is invited. So much so, Ahasuerus and all those who were leading this party were so considerate. They were so accommodating and hospitable. They made sure we're going to have a glatt kosher meal. I felt this way when last year, now that I mentioned it, last year, it's 2 years ago already. Myself and Rabbi Leibowitz both went with a couple of other people to the White House on Hanukkah. Happens to be it was the biggest waste of time ever. Sounds much cooler than it is. And I remember we were there, and I couldn't stop thinking about this. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not talking about political candidates. It didn't matter who the president was or wasn't. It's not my intention at all. It happens to be that when you go there, they serve you a glatt kosher meal, and it's really nice. And there was a big symphony orchestra from the Navy band that was playing only Hanukkah songs. It's really cool, really nice. I think Rabbi Leibowitz and I, maybe one or two others, were the only ones who weren't taking selfies of ourselves. Everybody was staring at us like these strange people. And it was an interesting experience, but all I can think about was the Gemara says, Shenenu Misudas Achashverosh. And again, I'm introducing this by saying I'm not making a parallel between Achashverosh and a president, not at all. But the point was, the Jews at the time were so comfortable in the society that they were invited to the highest echelons of government to come and participate, free reign. We're going to serve you a glatt kosher meal. We're going to kosher the kitchen the night before. We have special designated area for you. Nothing to be concerned about. Everything is fine. That's what I felt like. Here we were, hundreds of Jews, partying in the White House, eating glatt kosher food, listening to Hanukkah music by the Navy band. It's exactly what it was. And it feels really nice. And you're talking to congressmen and senators, and you see how much the Jews are integrated, you see how well they get along, and they see who we are, we see who they are. It's great. It's really nice. It's exactly what happened. They were living in a perfect society. Is this not reminiscent of everything that we live today? We live very prosperous, very comfortable, very accommodating lifestyles where we have civil and religious liberties, where the government, for the most part, accommodates all of our religious needs. And it's very nice. It's really comfortable. And it's the perfect storm for a slow and steady corrosion and degeneration of Jewish culture and Jewish society. When Ahasuerus puts out the invitation list, Kikein Yisad HaMelech La'asos Kirtzon Ish Va'ish, Ahasuerus says, we're going to accommodate everybody for their personalized, for their individual needs. So if you happen to be a vegetarian, we're going to have a meal for you. If you happen to be somebody who enjoys this kind of style food, we're going to have that for you. Kirtzon Ish Va'ish. Everyone's going to have exactly what they want. But the Gemara finds it curious. What does it mean, Kirtzon Ish Va'ish? Each and every man? And the Gemara says, I'll tell you what it is. There are two people in the Megillah who are referred to as Ish. One of them is Haman. When Esther points to Haman and says, Ish tsar ve'oyev Haman harasha hazeh. So Ahasuerus said, we need to make sure that we accommodate somebody the likes of Haman. But there's a second person in the Megillah who is referred to as Ish. Who is that? Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Abiro Shema Mordechai. And Ahasuerus says, we need to accommodate for Mordechai also. So we need to make sure the glatt kosher meals, we need to make sure it's all Chal of Yisrael, everything needs to be the up and up, six new mashgichim in the kitchen, everything needs to be just so, so that even Mordechai will be comfortable coming and participating. And that's what happens. The Jews enjoy this really festive 6 months, and they're getting comfortable with that atmosphere, and everybody is getting a flavor of how beautiful the culture and society is, and it leads them to a deep dive into the culture of the time. And they start networking. You know, they started off being at separate tables, but then how long can you sit with the same people? So you move over to this table, you move to that one, start talking. Oh, you have a business, I have a business, you have a daughter, I have a daughter. Everybody starts talking to each other, they start making shidduchim, and everyone's having a great time. So much so, the Medrash says, achlu v'shasu, they ate, they drank, they enjoyed, v'nishtakru, they became drunk, v'niskalkalu biznus, there was full immersion. They were so fascinated with all that was going on. Nobody meant to do wrong, but that's what happens. You slowly lose your identity when the host country in Golos is so accommodating. V'niskalkalu biznus. Esther is chosen as the queen. To her was a great tragedy. It's the last thing she wanted. There was a reason why Esther put on no makeup, why Esther denied all the ointments, all the treatments on her skin. She didn't want to look pretty for Ahasuerus. While everybody else wanted that he should choose her as the queen, she didn't want it. But the Jewish community at the time was thrilled. We have a Jew in the White House. Look at that. He has Jewish grandchildren. Look at that. Sound familiar? We have a Jew in the Persian government. Not just a Jew in the government. She's the queen. That means Ahasuerus is going to have Jewish grandchildren. We have finally made it. We have finally made it to where we as Jews are supposed to be. And with this wonderful, amazing experience that they're all having, and with this mindset, in walks Haman HaRasha. And he got us at a time of absolute vulnerability. And it was only for that reason that Haman had the ability to try and attempt to destroy the Jewish people. And Haman claims that the Jews are nonconformists, they're iconoclasts, they never go along with anything, they're always dissenting. Daseim shonos mikalam, they follow their own rules. What does that mean? The Gemara says in Megillah that Haman was upset. You know, they tell us that every seventh day is Shabbos. I asked them, what time does Shabbos start? I hired you to work in my business. What time do you have to leave on Friday? 7 o'clock. All of a sudden, it comes 6 months later, they tell me I have to leave at 3:30. What is this? When does Shabbos start? Make up your mind. Okay, but we understand maybe Shabbos starts earlier or later. Fine, we're willing to let that go. But the same shonos mikalam. All of a sudden, they make up rules as they go along. Then they tell me they have Pesach. Then they tell me they have Shavuos. I got to take off Rosh Hashanah. I have Lag BaOmer. I have this and that. All these different things. What is this? And Haman is furious. And he convinces Ahasuerus these Jews are out of control. They're going to destroy the economy. We cannot have them here. And as comfortable as you are with them, look at what they do. Look at how they behave. Look how differently they want to be than everyone else. And from here, everybody knows the end of the story. Vinahapochu was an amazing turn of events. And although Haman tried to convince Ahasuerus that the Jews were a handicap, they were a strain against the Persian society and culture, in the end it all turns around. But there's something about Purim that seems very different than all the other Yom Tovim. We have such an excessive, such an exaggerated reaction to the celebration of Purim. Mishta v'simcha, mishloach manos, matanos le'avyonim. It's something we don't find by any other holiday, by any other Yom Tov, when we have to highlight lots of great things that happened in Jewish history. In fact, there's a striking comment of the Medrash that the Rambam quotes. I don't know exactly what it means on face value. It must mean something. I just happen not to know. The Medrash says that Kol Yamim Tovim Asidin Libatel, all the holidays on the Jewish calendar are going to be gone once Mashiach comes, except for Purim. What it means, I really don't know. We're not going to have Pesach anymore, we're not going to have Shavuos, I don't know. What I do know it means is that there's some kind of very special significance to Purim, over and above everything else. How it plays out technically, I don't know. But what we do know is that this is something that is given a great sense of significance, more so than any other Yom Tov. We refer to the Megillah as Megillas Esther, and the simple understanding is because Esther is the major protagonist of the miracle. Esther is the reason why it all happened. The Gemara says that at the time Esther was petitioning the Chachamim of her generation, Kisvuni Ledoros, I want Megillas Esther to be a part of the Sifrei HaTanach. I want that the Jewish people should always have this story in their minds. And the Chachamim at the time rejected that plan, and they said, no, you know, it's just going to make sinah, it's going to build contempt and animosity from our enemies, it sounds like we're celebrating their defeat, not a good idea. In the end, Esther rams it through, Esther insists, and she asserts herself and says, absolutely, we're going to write this, this will be a part of Tanakh, and that's what happens. So the simple understanding is we refer to it as Megillas Esther because it's only because of her that we have this book. But many have explained it's not only that. It's because it was a time of such deep hester upon it. It was at a time when Jews forgot about their own identity. This was at a time when God was so hidden. It was at a time when Jews remembered Churban Beis HaMikdash. They remembered what happened, Asher Haglam Yerushalayim. They know what that means. Their whole identity was one of being disconnected from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were living in a sympathetic, warm-hearted society that welcomed them in and was so happy. They lived at a time of complete spiritual deterioration. It was Hester Punim. This is what happened. But here's what's amazing. And this suggests to Lubavitcher Rebbe is why Purim is such an exciting day and so relatable to us here living in Golus. When Haman stands up and says, we are going to kill anybody who is Mizera HaYehudim. We will kill anybody who is part of Am Mordechai, who is part of the nation of Mordechai HaTzadik. So the Jewish community at the time is under peril, they're being threatened. And they were all given a choice. In the times of Hanukkah, we hear that many Jews became misyavnim. They gave up. They decided to just join, to assimilate into the Greek culture. We don't hear about Jews in the times of Haman choosing to become misparsim. I don't know what the right word is for that. But I assume if it's mityavnim, then I guess it's mitparsim. I don't know. But we don't hear that. Which is an amazing phenomenon. When a Jew is pinned up against the wall, when a Jew is asked to make a fateful and critical, defining, decisive decision about who I am and who I am not, every Jew at the time, as much as they had assimilated, as much as they were involved, as much as they enjoyed everything that Ahasuerus gave them, when it came down to the decision of identity of who I am, that defining moment that really makes a Jew have to make that determination of who they are and where they are going to affiliate themselves and their identity, every Jew stood up and said, I am part of Am Mordechai. I am part of Zera HaYehudim. At that moment of truth, every Jew came through and decided that they were going to embrace the Jewish religion. And that is why we celebrate on Purim. Because that is the difficult challenge that we have living in Golus. When we are pinned against the wall and asked to make a decision, make a choice, what is your identity? Are you a Jew? Is that the way you identify? Is that your core essence? Is that everything you're about? Is it everything you represent? Or is all of American society who we are? And we have a decision to make every year. Whether we are going to do the same as those Jews back then, 2,500 years ago, or if we're going to just wither away and allow the Jewish people to deteriorate. The Gemara Masechet Shabbos Daf Pei Ches describes in vivid detail what happened on the occasion of Kabbalas HaTorah. And the Gemara recounts how the Jewish people said Na'aseh V'Nishma. But the Gemara tells us a strange story that Kafa Aleihem Har Kegiges, which means God almost forced them, God intimidated them, He coerced them into accepting the Torah. He threatened them, He held a mountain over their heads and said, if you don't accept this, that's it, you're finished. But then the Gemara tells us, Hadar Kiblu Abimei Achashverosh. In the days of Achashverosh, the Jewish community accepted the Torah again. As the Pasuk says, Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim. On this occasion, the Jews accepted the Torah voluntarily. They did it willingly. They did it with great spirit. And they were eager to accept it. This was the difference from the time of Kabbalas HaTorah to the time of Purim. Hadar Kiblu Abimei Achashverosh, and I believe what that means is, on the occasion of the Purim miracle, every Jew was faced with that fateful decision that they were able to make. Haman was threatening their lives, but he never said, you're going to be killed if you don't choose to join our culture, our community. And every Jew made that choice. Hadar Kiblu Abimei Achashverosh, they willingly made that choice to identify as Jews and to remain steadfast to their commitment to be Jews. In the middle of the Megillah we say, Balayla Hahu Nadida Shnas HaMelech. The Maharil writes that this is the turning point. It's the tipping point of the whole story. It means that the king, Achashverosh, was trying to sleep, and that night, for some reason, he wasn't able to do so. His sleep was interrupted. And that's why the Maharil writes, the Balkori has to raise his voice when he gets to that pasuk, Balayla Ahu Nadadash Nas HaMelech, because there's something special happening. That's the turning point of the whole story. As we know, whenever it says HaMelech in the Megillah, on the face value, it refers to Achashverosh. But we know the Sfarim tell us that it refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. Which is why at that moment, Balayla Ahu, when we read the Megillah, Nadida Shnas HaMelech, right, that is taken, that's borrowed from, anybody know? Yom Naran, from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. HaMelech, when we crown our king, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Melech Malchei HaMelechim, we read in that tone because there's something special happening here, not only with Achashverosh, but at that moment, it's almost as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu woke up. It's almost as if the Ribbono Shel Olam was dormant. The Ribbono Shel Olam was sleeping. And at that moment, he woke up. The Lubavitcher Rebbe writes so beautifully here, you can look at it in number Vav. Ani Yishena, we were in Galus. The Pasuk says in Sefer Shir HaShirim, Ani Yishena V'Libier, I'm asleep. The Jews at the time were asleep. As the Jews are today in America in Galus, they are asleep. There's something missing, there's something lacking. It's the passion to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the passion to be in Eretz Yisrael. And it was at that moment when there was such deep apathy, when the Jews were so disengaged with spirituality and with God Himself. It was at that moment, Nadidah Shnas HaMelech, that the slumber, so to speak, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was interrupted. And the Ribbono Shel Olam said, something needs to change. And it was at that moment that the Jews made that fateful decision. Hadar Kiblu Abimei Achashverosh. We will reawaken inside of ourselves that passion to be Jews and to do what Jews are supposed to do. We will once again reawaken that craving, that connection that was buried beneath the surface of our skin for so long. We had a love that was obscured, a love for our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But deep down every Jew knows that they have in their essence, in their heart, a real connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that night, Balayla Ahu, on that occasion, Nadida Shnas HaMelech, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was finally reawoken. And the Ribbono Shel Olam realized, my people are interested in a relationship once again. We're not comatose. We're not completely unconscious. Sometimes we fall asleep, Sometimes we're disengaged, we're apathetic, but we are awoken at moments in history from that sleep. Look at the second side of the page where one final comment. The Persian government was so accommodating to the Jewish people. Adarabah. Yehudim huzmanu lesudas hamalchus. We were invited to royal banquets. Isha Yehudiya haisa hamalka. We had a Jew in the Persian government who was married to the king. Uvechalzos kasher partza hagzera. When they were pinned against the wall. Kihigivu Mordechai haYehudi veEsther hamalka vechal haamas hagzera. When they accepted this decree. How did Mordechai respond and how did all of his followers react? Mordechai lo yichro velo yishtachaveh. Esther is willing to put her life in danger because she says, I need to stand up for the Jewish people who will now reclaim their own identity. Kol ha-Yehudim shuriyim b'halach ruach shal tshuva u'mesiras nefesh b'meshach kishana tmima. The Jews for an entire year were involved in a process of tshuva, were involved in a process of finally rejecting and renouncing their connection with the culture of the time. They finally stood up and said, it's time to reclaim our own identity. And that's why I believe Purim is the story that is so exciting and relevant for us here in Galus, because it's so applicable, it's so germane to the set of circumstances that we have, to American Jewish life, as we live it today. We live in the same set of circumstances. We are invited to participate in all levels of our society, of our culture here in America. And we are faced as Jews in America with impossible choices. We have a culture on the one hand that is so welcoming, that is so loving, that is so cordial and understanding for our practices, for all that we believe in. They're so sympathetic to our causes. But in so many ways, just think about it. We live in a society and a culture that is so antithetical, that is so diametrically opposed to what a Jewish life is meant to be all about, to what the attitudes and beliefs of a Jew are supposed to be thinking about. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu in times like these becomes an afterthought. The Ribono Shel Olam becomes secondary. He's a footnote to our lives at best. And our charge, our challenge is, in generations like these, to remind ourselves, Balayla Hahu Nadida Shnas HaMelech. It's time for us to cause the king to wake up. It's time for us to allow that rejuvenation, that reinvigoration to stimulate once again, to provoke HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to electrify our connection with Him, and to spark once again that godliness that is latent inside of all of us. That's what happened in the days of Purim. That is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded the way He did. And it's exceedingly complicated to do that when we live lives that are so comfortable, that are so prosperous, that are so wonderful, where we have Jewish communities that are flourishing, that are advancing, where we have burgeoning yeshivas, where we have couples getting married, where we have families that are doing really well in business, where we have a robust economy and society all around us, where we have homes to live in and strong communities to be a part of, where we have shuls that are built and nothing seems to be going wrong at all. But there's a major lack, a major deficiency. There's a huge void, there's a huge hole in our lives, and that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribono Shel Olam, who transcends all of this reality that we experience. Purim is the time for us to make that choice with resolve. Are we going to make that choice that we are, at our core, people who identify as Lo yichra v'lo yishtachaveh. I'm a Jew who is uncompromising in my principles. I will always and forever be part of Am Mordechai, Mizera HaYehudim. It's how I identify myself. It's what I'm all about. Do I have the courage to have a steadfast, determined resolution that I will be a Jew who is committed to the Jewish cause, that I will be a Jew who is devoted to everything that Judaism stands for, to everything that the Jews stood up for back then? Am I a person who's willing to identify myself as the Jew who is Asher Hagla Mirushalayim? Yes, life is wonderful here in Galus. We have so much going well for us, and we are extremely grateful, as the Jews in Galus, Bavel, in Paras and Madai were at their time. But that cannot replace our yearning to go back to Eretz Yisrael, to define and identify ourselves as the Am Hashem, and to stand up strong, lo yichra v'lo yishtachaveh, when we're given those impossible choices like the Jews in the days of the Purim story were. When we have to make that decision with conviction of who we are and what our core identity is all about. Purim reminds us every year to take that gift, to take that opportunity, to wake up HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Balayla hahu nadida shnas hamelech. We hope that this year will be our opportunity when we will be successful in doing so. I wish everyone an enjoyable Freilichen Purim and Amir Tzashem.